You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey there, and welcome to the FeedFeed podcast. I'm Alexa Santos. The FeedFeed is the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source for what to cook, bake, eat, and drink. Here on the podcast, we are speaking with members of the hashtag FeedFeed community to hear their stories, learn about their culinary inspirations, and get some of their best cooking tips. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by Natasha Feldman. She is a TV host, recipe developer, and brand new cookbook author. You may know her as Nosh with Tosh. She is a Webby-nominated host known for her YouTube series turned TV show, also called Nosh with Tosh. Natasha is committed to teaching her viewers how to cook and entertain in a non-fussy and fun way. Her cooking style, as she calls it, is West Coast produce meets East Coast deli. Thank you so much for being here, Natasha. I'm so excited to chat with you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to go back to the very beginning. I want to hear about where you grew up and what type of cuisine you grew up eating and what was kind of like your early childhood food memories.
You know, I think it's funny that most of the time when I hear that question asked, the response is something that feels so yummy, delicious. Like, you know, I would sit with my grandmother and we would make the matzo ball soup or whatever it is. I did not care at all about food growing up. The only way that my parents could get me to eat was if they found something that I liked on the television and they could distract me with it long enough to like get me to put food in my belly. I was just like not.
You were just not happy.
I was not a hungry kid. I just like, it was like, I really didn't think about food at all. And I really don't have very many food memories as a kid, except making monkey bread with my teacher in third grade. I think that was the first thing I ever ate. And I was like, oh my gosh, some food is so much better than other food. Like, it just didn't even occur to me. And then it wasn't until college really that I started loving cooking and loving to like think about food combinations and the storytelling of food, and then went to culinary school. But, you know, I grew up half in San Diego and half in Portland, Oregon. And in both places, you know, there's so much access to like delicious seasonal produce that I always like. I would always get a little bit excited about strawberries at the peak of season or cherries or this or that, but it was like, you know, nothing compared to how stoked I am now when I like see the new thing at the farmer's market. I don't know. It was like one day, it was like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and I just like haven't turned back. You know, it's very strange.
Well, I love that for you, a real Cinderella story. A glow up. I was kind of similar, if I'm being honest. Like I was fascinated with like Food Network and stuff when I was little, but like as a little kid, my grandpa actually used to call me One Bite Bertha because I would only take like one bite of things. And I was such a picky eater. So it's kind of funny to hear you describe that because yeah, if someone asked me that, like what are my earliest food memories, I'd be like, I don't know. I feel like it was getting bullied by my grandfather for how little I was eating. So,
yeah. I think my food memories are like, what TV show was I watching, you know?
No, I feel that.
It's so strange. It really, and I think because now I think you and I have the exact same feeling about this, which is like, obviously food is such a huge part of our lives. It almost feels embarrassing to admit it, but I think that the more we can just kind of own our story and you can like change and grow and become whatever the thing is, the better off we are. So I was like, should I like make up some story about my relationship with food as a kid? And I was like, no, I can't. I can't live with that lie. We're just going to let it roll.
No, honesty is the best policy. I appreciate you speaking your truth. And for fellow picky eater children turned food media professionals, we have our own alliance together.
Yes,
and
we yeah, see you.
You are heard, you are seen. Exactly. So, okay, so you had quite you had quite the glow up as it pertains to your knowledge and appreciation of food. So when, I guess, how you went to culinary school, and then how did this kind of evolve from there? Like, what was the whole story?
So it actually started, I was a junior in college and I was studying abroad, and I really was not, I was doing theater in London. And I realized, like, very quickly after getting there, that everybody else that was in this program was, like, tremendously talented. And I was, like, the weird fluke that somehow ended up in this program. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to find some way to, like, hold my own here, because no one's going to, like, what else am I going to do? So I just started cooking for everyone. So, like, everybody would be running lines and, like, really working on their scenes. And I would just be cooking for everyone. I was like, okay, well, this is the role that I fulfill here. And I started making lunches for people and family dinners. And I thought it was really fun. And it was the beginning of Tumblr. Remember the Tumblr days?
What a time to be alive. Like, that was...
What a time.
It was a moment that we'll never forget. And we learned and we grew from that. So,
and I started, I was still in college, and I just started this little silly Tumblr where I would ask people to send in their family recipes and, like, whatever it is that they can't eat anymore. And I would try to recreate the recipe for them so that they could enjoy it. So, you know, someone's like, my grandma used to make like chicken pot pie, and I can't eat gluten anymore. So then I would start, like, playing with all different kinds of doughs. And then when I got it to a place where I thought it was really tasty, I would send it back, and I would just work on these random people's recipes for as long as it took. And I really liked it. But then imposter syndrome started setting in, and I was like, oh, if this is something that I, like, actually want to do and want to pursue in a real way, I have to go to culinary school, or else I just know, like, personally, I will always feel like I missed out on something that I should have done. So after college, I, like, went right into it. And you know, I feel like almost everybody in food sort of has a similar story, where it's kind of like a tumbleweed that you just start picking up, like, other skills as you kind of go. So I did a lot of assisting teaching cooking classes, and, like, watching how people learn and what people respond to, and how people are motivated to become better cooks. And then I started doing a lot of food media and culinary producing. And as you sort of keep doing these things and food styling, you just start really coming up with this big messy ball that is, like, who you are in this world. And it kind of all came together in a way that organically made me want to share everything that I know about dinner parties, because it's something that at the very beginning of cooking, like, when I was, you know, at that study abroad program and was teaching people, I was, like, teaching myself how to cook and feeding all my friends and doing dinners. Like, that was kind of the first thing that made me really excited about cooking, is putting it in front of friends and, like, having that experience around a table together. So it's sort of the thing that has been the consistent throughout my whole journey in food. And when I got my first apartment in LA, my friend and I would make big themed dinner parties to movies just for fun. Ooh. And then obviously that became really crazy. I felt like in that period of time, we were all so stressed out, you know, like in our first jobs, like working mail rooms, just doing, like, all the kinds of work that you feel so like at the whims of the universe.
Right.
And it was really, like, an amazing bonding experience to just always know that these dinner parties were going to be there for us. And I feel like doing it year after year after year, we haven't really lost people, but you keep adding. You, like, add significant others, you add new coworkers, you add, like, a random person somebody met because it was their Uber driver. And our community has just, like, kept growing and growing in this really fun way. And I think I attribute it all to, like, this habit of dinner party. So when it came to deciding, like, what the first book was going to be, having sort of accumulated all these different little tidbits of knowledge about food, I was like, well, it has to be the dinner party, because that's what started the whole thing.
Right. Well, 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 look how it all came together. I love that. What was your
favorite? Full circle there.
Yes. What was your favorite movie themed dinner party, by the way?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have a few. We did Annie Hall and breakfast sandwiches and black and white cookies.
Oh,
just like a little deli Annie Hall situation. We did Raising Arizona and small Tex-Mex kinds of foods. That was very fun. And we did Spirited Away with bento boxes.
Oh my God, adorable.
We did Godfather with spaghetti and meatballs. There's a lot of them. It kind of goes on and on.
Yeah, it's like choosing a favorite child.
You can't do it. Some people can.
No. Well, that sounds so cool. And honestly, I feel like it's inspiring me to get more into dinner party mode. You know, I feel like people kind of assume because I work in food media that I have this like cooking pedigree where I'm like, you know what? I really have barely ever cooked for strangers. You know, like I cook for myself and my immediate family who's around and then just kind of like the internet, you know, it's not, I don't think I've ever actually hosted a dinner party for people where like new people are trying my food and whatnot. It just, for one reason or another, hasn't happened for me. And I feel like it's been on my mental radar for a little bit now where it's like, hey, like I need to like actually do this whole dinner party thing. I feel like I'm turning 30 in a few weeks. So I'm like, maybe that's what my 30s has in store for me, is that I need to actually evolve into, as my Pokemon evolves, I am going into dinner party mode.
I think it's your decade of dinner parties.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you.
I feel it for you.
Thank you so much. I am inspired by you and this conversation. Aww. So appreciate
it. What you said, thank you, sort of like cooking for, the way that you phrased it, cooking for strangers, is I think so much the way that people feel, even if the person coming over isn't a stranger. There's this like fear of judgment, you know, kind of like you're on your first date, but it can even be a friend that you've known for like 2 decades. But for whatever reason, when it comes to food, people get, well, I have my theories about why it is, but people get really nervous, like that maybe the dish that you cook is somehow a reflection of who you are as a human. And it's like when you say it out loud, it sounds insane, but it is like a part of the thought process. And I think the more that we can sort of talk about that and lower the stakes and feel okay about making dishes that maybe sometimes are going to be disgusting, sometimes you're going to burn something, but like people just want to have a good time with you. And being in someone's home, especially having people in your home, is like such an intimate thing. And I think that it really makes you feel more confident in your friend group and more confident in yourself, and is just like a big morale booster in a world that is otherwise like, you know, pretty messy.
Yeah, no kidding. So is that kind of like the vibe of your cookbook, is kind of taking away that fear and I guess not stigma, but just kind of stress around, you know, kind of like we said, cooking for strangers, having people into your home? Is that kind of like the vibe that you're going for to kind of take away that pressure?
Yeah, the whole vibe, basically, it's like a cookbook that tells you that you don't have to cook, which sounds weird. And as I was writing it, like a part of me was like, can I do this? But here we are, it's coming out in a few days. And basically, the point is, I want people to have people over. Like a dinner party is a dinner party because there are people in your space and you're enjoying time together and there is food being put into the mouth. Who makes the food, you know, is a part of your decision. So I think like if you've never had dinner parties and it's something that you want to engage with, a really nice way to do it is to like make a cocktail or a dessert and order takeout. Or even not make any of the components, but spend 15 minutes cleaning up when you get home from work and order takeout. Like the barrier to entry is so low. And what I try to do in the book is to sort of like break down all of those reasons systematically as to why you think you're not a person who can have dinner parties, and get it to a point where you're like, okay, I have no more excuses. And then I think once you feel like you have no more excuses and you do it, that's when you realize that it's something that you wish you had been doing forever.
I love that. You're very well spoken on the matter. So
clearly you put some
thought into this, you know, like you had some publishers or a team maybe who were
The way that the book is formatted, the first portion of the book, I'll have to send you one, but the first segment of the book really is all about sort of like breaking down those thoughts that you might have. There's like a flow chart to help you find what you want to make for dinner. And it goes all the way from like, you know, I have 5 seconds and my oven is actually where my shoes live, to I have all day and all the cooking tools and, you know, learn to make pasta in Italy. So there's really this like giant scope of who I think the book can be for, and you can really like find whatever your place is inside of that. And then there's also like menus so that it has suggestions of like what you can make to a certain theme, but then also suggestions for like, okay, if you don't want to make half of this, these are the things that are easiest to buy in a store. So it again just like wants to kind of hold your hand and make sure that the dinner party is meeting you where you're at, rather than you trying to like square peg, round hole yourself into this idea that doesn't work for you.
Okay. Love that. I mean, and that seems like exactly what I need as a dinner party novice. And, you know, even if you're not cooking for, you know, new people or a party or whatever, but even if you're doing like, you know, we've all been in that like cooking Thanksgiving at home situation where you're trying to juggle like, okay, I've got this in the oven, I've got this on the stove, this needs to stay hot, this needs 10 more minutes, you know, that's a very overwhelming thing. And I think what mm-hmm. you're providing as far as like ways to tackle that and kind of like take that burden off is super valuable, because even if it is just like, you know, a family dinner, but it's got multiple components or whatever it may be, it can certainly be overwhelming. So,
And so much of that is just how you orient your time, like things like salad dressings or cutting vegetables. Like there's so much that you can do a day in advance, 2 days in advance, like when you have 10 minutes. And if you kind of start thinking about a meal in sections rather than trying to make it all at one time, it becomes way less overwhelming. And another thing I like to suggest that people think about is temperature. Like you were saying, you know, maybe you have like the turkey in the oven and the stuffing here and da-da-da. I always try to make sure that whenever, like, I don't have to have like 18 zillion things that have to be at a certain temperature. Like ideally you can have like one thing on the stove and one thing in the oven that are temperature sensitive, and like everything else I kind of want to not matter. Otherwise it's not a struggle, but like it's definitely a balancing act. And I think especially when you have people over and you want to be available to them and you want to feel like you're like engaged in conversation and not stressed out and not trying to like, you know, bend over backwards doing math problems to like, you know, figure out when things have to come out of the oven, it's the more that you can do that and sort of like not self-sabotage from the get-go, the better.
Yeah. Well, amen to that. And so how does it feel for you to have this going out into the world? I know you've been in this industry, you know, for a while and, you know, kind of doing, you know, you've had the YouTube show, your own platform, your own blog, you have all this stuff. But I know for many cooks and chefs and, you know, food media professionals, having that physical book out in the world is such a big moment. So A, congratulations. And B, tell me what that feels like.
Thank you. I'll be honest. I feel like we're having a very delightfully honest conversation all yes. the beginning. You know, I've seen so many videos of people like opening up their books on like Instagram where you see them like take the X-Acto knife and open it and they hold it in their arms and just like cry because it's so exciting. I was so excited for that moment. I got the camera. I like turned it on. I was like, yeah, I'm about to have big feelings. And I open the box and I look at the book and I'm like, oh yeah, like, I've been working on this book for 2 years. I know exactly what it looks like. I'm not surprised at all. And then I just had to like turn the camera off and be like, well, that didn't happen. I'm so excited, but I'm also learning that the things that I thought would excite me are different than what my expectations were. And that there's so much of this journey, much like a dinner party, where I think like the more that you put the pressure on like how you're supposed to feel, how it's going to come out, what people are going to take away from it, the less fun it is. So I'm really just like kind of taking it as it comes. And the part that's been the most exciting by far is I gave it, you know, I have a few advanced copies that were given to people, and to like see them already cooking from it is the thing that makes my stomach like flip flop with joy. And it's just, you know, I'm like, even if 10 people are dinner party converts and dinner party for the rest of their lives, and it's because of the Dinner Party Project, like, that will just make me so, 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 so happy.
I feel pretty confident about you getting one convert in just me, so.
nine down. Yeah.
Amazing. So, yeah, I mean, it's all, like, just super real, and I totally know what you're talking about, of, like, that moment where you're, like, expecting something to feel so huge, and then all of a sudden it happens, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I mean, I did work for that, you know? It's like, this is exactly how we drew it up, but it is exciting. And I think that, like, the fact that it's something that seems to be so uniquely you and so, like, authentically you is very cool, and that it's something, you know, it's nice that you were able to be so real with it and not, like, pretend that you're, you know, Michelin star like Danielle Boulud. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, this is folks who, you know, this is for real folks who may struggle or may be afraid of this or may be afraid of that. Like, I struggled with this too. You know, I think that that's really important. And even in my journey in food media, I feel like that's been a big part of what's, like, brought me more joy in this space, is being more real about it and not pretending to be something I'm not. So it sounds like, without having read the book, that that's definitely the vibe that you have. So that's, like, an accomplishment in and of itself, just to have so much, like, authenticity with what you're putting out into the world, you know?
And I feel so lucky. My editor at Harper, is she believed in me so much. She was basically like, go write the book. Like, I'm not going to bother you. You're just going to write it. And then I'm going to look at it after. And I was so nervous. I was like, but and then I went off and did it and came. And, you know, when I submitted it to her, I was like, she knew something, you know, so valuable that I didn't yet, which is, the more you start having, like, a brainstorming melding of minds at the beginning, the harder it is to really make something that feels so you. And she really, like, let me kind of go as far as I wanted and to play and make, you know, illustrations as wacky and really have, like, very specific examples of, like, humor that I think are funny, from, like, you know, Seinfeld and The Nanny and all of these different things, that it really just, you know, felt like I was, like, it's really just a representation of me. And she was so, so amazing at not only letting me do that, but then, like, in the edits, stripping away some of the stuff that didn't feel that way and encouraged me to go even further. And I'm really, really happy that she knew what I didn't know, which is, like, one, that I could do it, and two, that the more that nobody else touches it as you're going through it, the more it can really feel like your baby.
Oh, well, I love that. I mean, and that's, I mean, sounds like a dream, honestly, that you were given that much creative freedom with it. And it just sounds like a super fun situation to, like, match your personality and your passion and all that. So it feels like whoever reads it is going to get, like, a very good sense of, like, who you are as, like, a person and a cook and an entertainer and all that. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely would love to get my hands on it to see what it's all about. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
As the expert dinner party aficionado, without, you know, giving away too much from the book, is there any, like, top number one, like, spark notes tips you have to give to folks who ask you about it?
I love spark notes tips. Well, okay, so there are a few things. You know, I think, like, one question people always want to ask is, like, what's the non-negotiable? You know, if you're going to have a dinner party, there has to be something where if, like, someone doesn't do it, you're like, you have ruined the sanctity of the dinner party. And I've like thought about it enough times where I'm like, okay, there is one, and it's that you have to have toilet paper. Have you ever like gone over to someone's house and they're you finish peeing and then you're like, well, what now? Now I'm just in this bathroom, and then you start like opening the cabinets and you can't, and you know, I'm like, I actually truly think like whatever you want to serve, however you want to serve it, wherever you want to do that is all fine. Like paper towels instead of napkins, amazing. Paper plates, if like that's what you have time for, take out, make it, you know, it's like, really, I do not have anything to say about like what's a no-no as far as that's concerned. But like when it comes to the bathroom, I'm like, if you don't have toilet paper, don't have people over. You know, like, that's really where I draw the line.
That is so real though. Like that is so important. And you don't want to be caught embarrassing yourself with that.
And it's it's like not even embarrassing for the host. It's embarrassing for you as the guest to be like, excuse me, is there any, can somebody help me out here? But
you like text someone from the bathroom, like, can someone please?
I think that so really, really understanding that the barrier to entry to dinner parties is only what you put on yourself, and that there is 100% a dinner party that is going to work for you. You know, especially the more that you can think about like, well, who am I? What's my lifestyle? What's going to fit within that? And then play with the dinner party around that. You know, like it's a good social experiment for you and your friends. And it's a great way to kind of get to know yourself better also. But you have to have toilet paper. You know, you don't have toilet paper, you can't have people over. And wait, what's another tip that people have? What's another one? You got to give me a genre of tip.
I guess with maybe like portioning, perhaps.
Ah, great question. For anyone that is not like, honestly, if you do not cater for a living, I would never put food on anybody's plate. Like family style, 100% of the time, I always put everything in the middle. That way, like if somebody isn't that hungry, or if somebody like really likes one thing over another, nobody has to feel like they just have to eat what was put on their plate because it was put there. Everybody sort of has control over their own portions, which is going to make them feel way more comfortable. And then you don't have to worry about like bringing someone this like perfectly plated dish of like cold chicken because you've been working on it, you know, for 15 minutes, like using tweezers to put cilantro leaves down. You know, you want it to feel like really relaxed and low maintenance and fun. And I think that having like an interactive portion, i.e. everybody kind of pulling from the middle of the table, is a really good way to sort of like bring a vibe and also make your life easier.
Well, that's a good one as well. Well, you're chock full of tips, as predicted.
I can go all night.
Yeah. Well, was there anything else super important to ask about your culinary journey or passion for dinner parties or cooking or anything that I missed, perhaps?
What did you miss? I'm trying to think. What else might there be? Well, I guess I am going to start a dinner party hotline. It's like a text line that people can ask in submit questions. And I think the more, you know, there are a lot of people that I think post recipe videos who don't necessarily want to be bothered all the time, because that's completely reasonable. I love being bothered. And you can like ask me recipe questions anytime, any day, any holiday. I'm like basically always around. I call myself the Butterball Hotline. Like, at Thanksgiving, all of my friends are like texting me the whole day. I have so many like people DMing me that I've never talked to before. And, you know, this community is obviously one that really loves food, and I want them to know that I am at their disposal as well. And, you know, anyone that has questions as they're combing through the book, like, I'm always available. You know, the book is an extension of me, and I want people to really be able to have fun and have like a sense of freedom with it. And if that means like a little bit of extra hand holding just by like sending a message, I'm always available for that too.
Well, look at you doing the Lord's work for everybody. That is
so fun.
Yeah. I mean, I personally like get super overwhelmed with like, I feel like that's a very, I don't know, today's day and age thing where like a lot of people are like, hey, yeah, like, sorry, I haven't answered you in a week. Like, mental health not doing great. You know what I mean? Where you just like get so overwhelmed by just like obligations and things to answer and people to be there for, you know, whatever. But it's very refreshing to hear someone with like the exact opposite perspective of just like, I am wide open. Let me know what you need. I am here. Cause you don't hear that all too often. So that is a very valuable thing.
I completely understand why people feel that way. I mean, burnout is so real. And I think for me, for whatever reason, getting to focus on somebody else's issue or like kitchen dilemma or whatever it is very meditative. Like, it's like stepping away from your own reality and getting to do something else. You know, and usually it's me being like, well, I guess I'm not finishing my taxes because Betty has a question about her pasta, you know? So for me, it's like really an excellent way to just put off stuff, to procrastinate. And it really just makes me happy.
Hey, maybe that's its own form of therapy in and of itself, is like, instead of dealing with my issues, how about, hear me out, I just start answering people's recipe questions.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to tune out and tune into some questions and think about meatballs, and, you know, life is good.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, maybe I should give that a whirl, because that sounds like a move, honestly. Wow. Well, okay. Lots to think about, lots to contemplate. And I just appreciate you so much for giving me and, you know, listeners this inspiration on dinner parties and food and, you know, how to be there for other people. You got a lot of deep perspectives, you know, maybe a different way of coping. We love that. And yeah, just thank you so much for being here and for sharing all that. It's been a pleasure and a thrill.
Yeah. It's been really fun. And, you know, just, I can't wait to hear about all of your dinner parties.
Yes.
I'm sure they're going to be fabulous.
One, I'm nervous, but I think, you know, with your guidance, I'll be sure to message you every single question I have. Especially if you're like, you're dealing with stuff, I'm like, oh, this is what Natasha needs. She just needs to help me with that.
As an empath, especially
as an empath, you'll just get involved with my issues instead.
Fabulous. Cannot wait.
Woohoo. Well, thank you so much, Natasha.
My pleasure. I look forward to chatting again.
Woohoo. Thank you so much for listening. To learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the FeedFeed, head to thefeedfeed.com. If you have a food story to tell or want us to interview a blogger, cookbook author, chef, or restaurateur, we would love your suggestions. Just send us a DM on Instagram. See you next time.
The FeedFeed podcast is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.